This is Their Life Story Podcast with Robin Levine. I have always believed that everybody has something to teach all of us. In this series of interviews, I will talk to all types of people in order to learn from and be inspired by them and their life stories. My guest this week is my friend Alex Harrow. Alex is the editor at The Inertia, an online surf and outdoor culture magazine. He's got an amazing story of living in California in a van, building a cabin which burnt down, and meeting incredible people along the way. I've recently partnered with Change Toothpaste. It's a chewable toothpaste. It comes in a pallet and you chew on it, turn it into a paste, get your toothbrush wet, brush your teeth. It leaves your mouth feeling nice and clean. You don't have to throw away the toothpaste tube, and the bag that it comes in is completely compostable. And you can find them online at changetoothpaste.ca.
Alex, thanks a lot for joining me.
Yeah, man. Good to see you. It's been a long time.
Yeah, good to see you too.
I can't believe you want to talk to me.
Of course. I really do, actually. Where are you from? Lake Cowichan?
No, Victoria.
Oh, you're from Victoria.
Yeah, so I was born in Victoria, and then we moved around a bunch when I was a kid because my dad was a diplomat, so we like bounced around all over, like everywhere. And then we ended up back in Victoria when I was in like grade one, I think, because my parents split up, and then I lived there ever since.
What did your dad do? What's a diplomat do?
Oh, he's basically, as far as I could see, he would just like have to throw parties for people in like governments from other countries and just like be a nice dude. There's a lot more that goes into it, obviously, but it's like maintaining relations with other governments. So he's like a Canadian diplomat.
Hey, that's cool.
I wish I remembered more. I was too young to like remember all the traveling we did.
And then you said your parents split up?
Yeah, they split up when I was in grade six or 7 years old, and then moved back to Victoria.
Did you have to pick one to live with most of the time, or did you switch it up?
No, it was basically dad had too much work, and then mom just like, we just went with mom, and then we saw dad like in the summers.
How many kids are you?
Me and my brother, and then I got two stepbrothers now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I got an older brother in Sacramento, and then two stepbrothers. One is in China, and one's in Toronto.
So are you half American?
Yeah, I mean, technically, yeah, but I don't think of myself. I identify as Canadian.
Yeah, no, I just, because you, when you lived in the States, I was like, I think you might have been like American before.
Yeah, no, my mom's side of the family is from California. So I got an American passport when I was like 15 or whatever, just in case. And then, yeah, it came in handy for work.
Yeah, that's awesome. So when you were like little, what kind of things were you getting up to?
Oh, shit, I don't know. Same, like,
yeah, what, like hobbies and or like what did you think, where did you think your life was gonna go when you were young? Like what did you see for yourself?
I don't think anybody has any idea when they're young. I don't know. I same as everybody else, I was like wanted to be a pro baseball player.
Pro baseball player.
All that. Well, I mean, you know, when you're like 10 years old, that's what every kid wants. Played a lot of baseball. I read a lot. So it was kind of like inside a lot of the time, more than some of my friends, I think. And then, yeah, just all the regular shit, like riding your bikes around with your friends and, you know, and then in high school you start drinking and you start doing dumb shit. And it was super average, nothing incredible.
What were you reading?
Well, it depended on how old I was, but obviously like Archie.
Oh, nice.
And then, I don't know, fuck, like Goosebumps and shit, like all that stuff. And then I got into like Hardy Boys real big. Obviously, this is just like how every boy's reading trajectory goes. And then I started reading horror novels a whole bunch. Just fuck anything. By the time it was like, but even in high school, it was like I'd still read Archie comics, but I also was like into Hemingway and stuff. So
you're into Hemingway by high school?
Pretty much. I basically just like a wide range. I don't have like a genre that I'm really into. A lot of the time it's just garbage trash novels just to like pass time. I'd rather read a shitty novel than watch shitty TV for half an hour, you know? So
yeah, it's a better use of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was there a point where you realized you wanted to be a writer when you were like still even in high school and you're reading all those books?
You know, I think I like sort of, I just was like always something that I like kind of, I never really thought to myself, like, I want to be a writer. I just like always kind of assumed that it would sort of happen, which is weird. I mean, I don't even know if you count what I do as writing. Like, I don't think I'm like a writer. I feel like an actual writer is like maybe someone who's like got a book published. You know, I don't know. I guess I do write, like technically write for a living, but I don't. It's not what I do now. Isn't exactly like what I thought I was going to be. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, like when I thought of being a writer, I was like, ooh, I'm gonna be like all dramatic, like smoking cigarettes and like drinking bourbon, and which I guess I do, but like, but like, you know, like tearing your hair out, like struggling over your work, like staring at the blank page until your forehead bleeds. And now it's just like, it's like an everyday thing. Here's like my amount of things I gotta write, you know. It's like, and it's not like super creative anymore. I mean, sometimes it is, but it's not, I don't know, it's just sort of like copy editing. Like, you don't, there's not a lot of like creativity that goes into it. I mean, like occasionally, like if you're doing feature or something, there is, but just basic news reporting is like, here's the thing that happened. Here's the thing that happened. Here's the thing that happened.
So are you still like really craving that kind of writing?
Like the creative writing?
Yeah. Where you're pulling your hair out.
Oh fuck. Yeah. Like I'm working on a novel right now. And
oh no, that's crazy. What?
So I still do that. I just, I don't know if it's going to go anywhere, and there's like no way you can rely on that for like income, obviously. So that's just like, you know, pipe dream. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, no big deal.
What's the novel that you're working on about?
Oh, it's kind of set in the future. And there's a giant disaster, and it's kind of a long story. There's a huge disaster, and since it's in the future, everything's got nuclear. And in the middle of the country, there's it's called New City, and it's like a super like socialist utopia. Basically, everything the state's like is kind of arguing about right now, and it's like super green. It's like a giant commune. And anyways, like a test city to see like what would happen. So all these people from the coast that get displaced, they have to move into this middle of the city. And it's based around this one guy named Martin and his dog who gets really bored in New City because everything is just handed to him. And he decides he's going to head out to the coast that's like polluted and nuclear, just to like figure out what's out there, because he's like bored of his life doing the same shit every single day. So he's like, I'm just going to go figure out what the fuck is out there. I think it's kind of cool so far, but I mean, who knows? It might suck. I don't know. I can't even tell anymore.
is there some of you in Martin?
You know, it's funny. I was actually just talking to my partner about this. Yeah, there's like a lot, which I didn't realize until like a few weeks ago. I was reading through some of the earlier chapters, and there's like quite a bit of it. And I'm like, oh shit, that's like exactly shit that I was going through / am going through. It's cool.
So, you didn't intend it to be like that.
Not at all. No. So I started writing it while I was in California, and then I had to move home because my house that was there that burned down in that Woolsey fire. So I had to move home. I was going to move home anyway, but that just like, I moved home quite a bit faster than I was expecting to. So I feel like a lot of the stuff that I've written since then, like I started it before the house burned down. And then a lot of the shit that I've written since then, since I moved home, has been like, this sounds super corny, but like kind of like my journey with figuring out what the fuck I'm feeling and shit.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, no, I think maybe it was like cathartic in a way, like they're supposed to be, but I always thought I was bullshit. And then I was reading through it and I was like, oh shit, this is like what everybody says happens.
It's probably been a really good way for you to cope with your house burning down.
I don't know, dude. I have a hard time like looking within myself. I feel like I should be better at it, but no.
You found some property, you built your own cabin, and then you didn't have it for that long. Then a big California fire came and burnt it down like pretty quick after you built it.
Yeah, well, it was kind of I moved to California just like for 3 months to see. So the website that I worked for, the guy that started it, he called me as he was starting and was like, hey, do you want to help? And I met him when I was interning at Surfer Magazine.
Oh, cool. That's where you got your first start with Surfer Magazine.
Yeah. I kind of just lucked out. I don't know what they were doing hiring me. So he called me and was like, hey, I'm starting this website. Do you want help? Do you want to help? And I said, yeah. And at the time I was an arborist here on the island. And after a couple, year and a half of doing like just free work, cause I like doing it for him. He called me and was like, hey, we actually have like a handful of advertisers, so I can afford to pay you for 3 months if you want to just come try it out. So I said, yeah, that sounds fun. And then I convinced my partner somehow, I don't know what the fuck she was doing, to quit her job, buy this like garbage van with me, and then drive to California just to like see what happened. So we did. There's an old 81 Dodge. Thing is so sweet. We just leave it in Mexico now. It still runs. It's crazy.
Anyway, I just saw a picture of it.
Yeah, I love that van, dude. I love it. it's unbreakable. Yeah, so... anyway, that was kind of a difficult 3 months because we were living on, it wasn't like one of those, when you think of like going to California in a van, it's like got this like glossy sheen where it's going to be like all sunshine and like super nice. It's fucking not. We like lived on the street in Venice. I was like
trying to find a place to poop and shower.
Yeah, dude. It's like, it was like, it's nice if you're on a highway and you're traveling, but as soon as you're like in a city, you're just a fucking homeless person in a van. Like fighting with other homeless people in vans for like the spot with Wi-Fi that you can steal from somebody's house and like showering in the YMCA and stuff. So my partner was, after 3 months, she was over it. She was like, what the fuck are we doing here? And I was like, well, I got to stay. Cause this is like, maybe is like a, my dream is happening. I got to like see what's happening, see if it'll pan out. So she was like, okay, fuck off, you idiot. Like, I'll see you in a couple months. So she came home, which is fair enough. I was being a fucking idiot. Like, I should have gone home with her. Anyway, so she went home, and then I was all bummed. And I called my aunt, who happened to live in the hills above Malibu. And I asked her if I could just park my van on her street because I was like really sick of being in Venice, where our office was in California. And she said, "Yeah, no problem." So I came and parked on her street for a little bit and just lived in the van. On her street. And then after like 4 months of that, she was like, hey, what are you planning on doing? And I was like, I don't know, honestly. She said that I could build a little cabin at the like back 40 of her property. If I paid for it, I didn't have to pay a rent. I just had to pay to build it. Which I don't know if was a good deal or not. Expensive.
That's a good point. She just got you to build a cabin on her property.
Jokes on her though, because it's all ashes.
Well, it's just really unfortunate because it looked awesome.
It was super cool. Yeah. So I plucked away at it for like 3 years. I don't know what the fuck I was doing. I don't know how to build a house, but it was like a lot of YouTube and a lot of like, going to the library and renting and getting books on like how to lay shingles on a roof and like how to do electrical and stuff. And it was all unpermitted.
right. Which would be a problem once it burnt down.
Oh, big time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was like, I was probably 90% done. And then I was in Mexico and I was there for like 2 weeks and I came back from Mexico and I had like a bag of shit that was like, I had my spearfishing gear, one surfboard and a bag of like dirty Mexico clothes. I left all that stuff in the back of my pickup, went up, slept that night in my house, didn't unpack my stuff. And then at like 6 the next morning, my neighbor shows up, this old guy named Jerry, who's like my best friend still. And he was like yelling about the fire or whatever. So, we ended up evacuating and I kind of assumed we'd be back in like, a couple hours at most. Cause like you get evacuated like every now and then, especially like October, November, when it's like peak fire season there. So then that fire turned out to be like quite a bit worse than I initially thought it was going to be. So the next day I was like, fuck me, like guaranteed my house is gone. And I was like, I have a bag of like, two board shorts that smell like shit because I've been wearing them for 2 weeks in Mexico and like two t-shirts and a surfboard and like a spear gun and some fins. And I was like, oh, fuck. Luckily, I sold my passport because I hadn't unpacked my stuff. Wow. Anyway, so we fucked around for like probably 2 weeks, like trying to get, because they closed all the roads and stuff. Because you couldn't even get into like Malibu proper for like 4 or 5 days.
So you couldn't even go back there for.
No, months. I couldn't even like, I wasn't even sure. Like nobody's sure. So I was like, you know, trying to call my other neighbors to see if they had any information. Anyway, I ended up just like busting, like blowing by a police checkpoint because I was like, fuck you, I'm getting there.
Oh, you snuck in.
Yeah. The guy's like yelling at me and I was like, see you later. and then I ended up following this guy, my old neighbor, up this like an old fire road that used to exist, but like isn't really a road anymore. And that ended up like looping around to our property. And then I was like, oh, okay, well, it's gone for sure. Which sucked, but it totally, like, it really worked out for the best in the like long run. Like looking at it now, you know, 2 years later, like it like needed to happen, which otherwise I would have been fucking guaranteed. I would have been 50 years old, 60 years old, like living in this shack, like just drinking a whole bunch and like not doing anything except for like surfing quite a bit. And that sounds pretty good, actually. no, but like I needed to move home. You know, I'm back with my partner now. We have a beautiful house. Like it just worked out. It worked out for the best for sure. It was just like a huge kick in the pants to be like, hey, get your fucking life back straight.
So it was, you're look at it and you're glad that it happened in a lot of ways.
I mean, ideally, yeah. Ideally I would have just moved home and the house wouldn't have burnt down. We could have like our house here and then like a, whatever, like a little vacation home in Malibu, but that's not the way it panned out. So what are you going to do?
Did anything like burn down of your aunt's? Like, is your aunt's house okay?
No, her house is gone too. The whole street's gone. There's two houses left on the street. There's fucking wild, man. Like going back to see it. Oh, it's crazy. Just fucking flattened. All the trees burned, like all the houses, like not, my aunt's house was a fucking chimney. That's it. It was wild. Dude, fire, like, you know, like fires are fucking devastating, but like when you actually, I like when I was firefighting, it was like I had never seen like a city block burned down. It's just seemed,
yeah, me neither.
Yeah, it's nuts. But there was like flaming cars and shit and like little kids' shoes. It was like out of a fucking movie.
Wow. Yeah. Did anybody die in those fires?
Yeah, but not in so the Woolsey fire, they found a body, but they're like have never been positive if they died from the fire.
Right.
Super weird.
Yeah.
The Paradise fire, that one was like way worse. It was like around the same time as Woolsey, but that was like the one where the entire fucking city burned down and like shitloads of people died like trying to get out. So dude, that it could have been so much worse. Like the Woolsey fire, it was terrible, but when you look at what happened in Paradise and stuff, like, man,
what a shitty reality of living in California,
dude. It's crazy.
When I was in Nicaragua last winter, I met a guy who owns trailer parks. Like, he's just an investor and he buys trailer parks at all over California. And he had two trailer parks that burnt down that he owned.
Oh, fuck, man.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's just like a thing that happens like every summer or like every summer and fall, like people's fucking houses burn down. It's wild.
So when you moved back, like you got back together with your girlfriend and well, then...
we were already back together.
Okay.
Yeah. So she grew up in Lake Cowichan, which is where I am now. So I just burned home after like 2 weeks of like fucking around with like Airbnbs in California and trying to figure out like insurance and my, just getting my aunt sorted out. I got my truck and drove home. She was living in Duncan at the time. And then we moved to a town called Glenora, which is like, well, it's like an area of Duncan. And then we ended up finding this place on the lake in Lake Cowichan. It's like right on the lake. And she grew up here. So she was like, we should move to Lake Cowichan. And then we came and looked at the house and I was like, yep, this is like sweet.
That's awesome. What's your aunt's situation like now?
She ended up moving to, I had another aunt who lived in Ukiah, which is like quite a ways north from Malibu. And she ended up living, she moved in there with her. So she's still just, my other aunt had like a little cabin type thing that was just on her property. So she ended up living there and she's still there. She's like looking around for a place to buy, sort of like Russian River area. But she's, for the time being, she's like, this is fine. I can just live here. It's like two older cat ladies living together. And I think they're having a blast. They just smoke weed. That's hilarious.
So if you would have built that place that your cabin to code, and it would have been like, it would have been insurable, but since you just like threw it up and didn't follow any codes and no, you didn't pass any permits, it was just gone.
Just a riot. I was just like, I can't even, there's nothing I can do. Like my aunt looked into like whether or not it could be insured as like an outbuilding. So she could maybe give some cash, but like, I knew like when I was building it, that it was like, you know, I'm not permitting it. So I was like, if anything does happen, like I'm fucked. And I like, so I was aware that something, if I did like lose it somehow, I was kind of like already okay with just being like, see you later, I'll wash my hands clean. But she tried a little bit, but in the end it was like, she was like, well, if this fucks with my insurance, because her house is insured. She was like, if this fucks with mine, like I'm not going to try and like screw around. So
yeah,
if that's fair, I get it.
You were saying there was like a really cool, like old guy that you were hanging out with. What? Jerry. That guy? Yeah.
Jerry. He's sweet, man. Yeah. So he's my neighbor. He's like, I think he's like 75 now. And honestly, I was in California for 5 years and I met some like really great people. But Jerry like became my best friend, which is super weird. He's this old guy. He's like really laid back. He wears sweatpants all the time. Sweatpants and like this ripped denim shirt. Nicest fucking man on the planet. Like, it will just do anything for anybody. Like, fuck. So that day the house burned down, the day of the fire, we drove down to Malibu. He drives this like 79 Dodge or 79 Ford stepside, sweet truck, but the frame's all bent and like he doesn't have a lot of money. He's just like does like odd jobs here and there for people. And because when I say Malibu, it's not like the Malibu on the coastline. It's like there are wealthy people, but there's also like, you know, farmers and shit. Anyway, so we drove down. I saw Jerry down at the down by the grocery store where there was like sort of a muster point. And he was filling up this, he had like a 25 or 20 gallon thing of gas. And he was filling up this fucking super nice Mercedes with this like super rich couple beside it. And he was like giving, it was like his last little bit of gas.
What?
And I was like, Jerry, you were the nicest man in the fucking world. Anyway, so yeah, he's his house burned down too. His was similar to mine. It was just like he bought the property there in like I think the late 70s, and he'd spent the whole time just like tinkering and like building these like little cinder block shacks, all unpermitted too. I think he just stole power from his neighbor with like an electrical cord.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that was sweet. But he was just so nice that everybody just like let him get away with shit, because he just like, you know, he played poker all the time with fucking like super like Malibu elite, and then like hung out with the bums at the library. Like that guy just was, everybody loved him. So he lost his house, and then he ended up kind of on his feet again. He's back in the same property. Somebody sold him a sort of like a Winnebago type thing, so he's just living there, still stealing, I imagine, still stealing electrical off the neighbor. Talk to him every now and then. We get on the phone and we just like bullshit for a while.
That's awesome. Is that one of the people you miss most from living out there?
Oh, big time. Huge, for sure. But he's like, he's one of those guys that, you know, it's funny now, like you don't necessarily like, well, at least I don't like get on the phone and talk with people that much anymore. Like you just like text and be like, here's like, give me this one piece of information. This is just what I need to know. And then Jerry, he'll get on the phone and you fucking just talk to that guy for like, we have like 2 hour conversations. And then I'm like, holy fuck, there's nobody else in my life that I just get on the phone with like, you know, twice a month just for the sole purpose of talking to.
That's like, awesome.
Yeah. Every time I talk with anybody else, usually it's like, here is a, I need to know something, or like, you need to know something from me. And it's like a quick in and out. And then me and Jerry just fucking bullshit.
Have you learned any like important life lessons from Jerry?
Yeah, I mean, tons, but a lot. Fuck. I want to be like him, and I also like really don't want to be like him. So I'm somewhere in the middle, because like I know that Jerry is super happy with his life, and I'm jealous of that. Like, I'm happy with my life, but like I would like to be, when I'm 75, I'd like to be as happy as Jerry. Like, he's got no partner. He's got his dog Bex. He's got his old truck. And he just like lives in a Winnebago, and he's fucking fine with that. Like, he doesn't, He doesn't need anything. And I would like to think that I'd be like that. So I sort of like, that's an aspect of Jerry's life that I like actively try and like remind myself to be like, you don't need much. You'll be fine if you're not. But at the same time, I would hate to be 75 and have no partner and be like, oh fuck, when I have to go to like a retirement home, like who's going to support me?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's kind of a toss up.
It's pretty unusual to like just be that comfortable with like very little. Hey.
Yeah. Jared does not give a fuck. He's like, if anybody judges him, he's like, I don't care about you or your feelings about me at all. It doesn't affect him at all.
Sounds awesome. Like everybody likes him anyway, but yeah, that's a good thing to learn. Just like not give a shit.
Yeah. Yeah. He really doesn't. It's awesome. I mean, he gives a shit about other people, like about their feelings entirely. But like when it comes to what people think about him, it doesn't faze him in the slightest. Just rolls off his back.
Is that one of your like favorite qualities in other people? Just not when they don't care about what other people think?
Yeah. And I think so because I struggle with it. Like I definitely like worry about what other people think, even though I know it's stupid and I know I shouldn't. And honestly, I think that most people, I think that most people probably do. They're just better at like hiding it a little bit. Cause like, I think a lot of successful people, not that like, I mean, depending on what your measure of success is, but I think a lot of successful people get there because they like, they have like a really singular focus on what they want to achieve, and other people's judgments and shit like doesn't affect where they're going. Like maybe it affects their like mental well-being, but it like doesn't affect their end goal. And I think sometimes I definitely have a hard time. Fuck, even like with this novel I'm writing, I think it's good, but God damn it, I will not let somebody read it until it's like done. Because I'm worried that if somebody's going to say something that like, this is stupid, and I'll just like, fuck it, I can't do it anymore. I'm not writing it anymore. I'm done.
I could really see that if I was writing a book. You don't want anyone screwing with your head.
No. And honestly, I don't know. I feel like there's probably a lot of people that are probably deal with the same shit as me. And like I said, I think they're just better at maybe hiding it. With the exception of maybe Cole St. Jean. Cole does not care. But it's because he's so fucking good at everything that he's just like, I've got a lot of confidence and stuff. I can do it.
I always think Cole could be like if I work at something for like 4 or 5 years, Cole could like probably get better in 2 months.
Oh, fuck. Yes, dude. You give something to Cole and say like, master this. He's like, calls you an hour later. He's like, I did.
Yeah. I know stuff that he's like really good at. You're like, he must have been doing this for a long, long time. And you're like, well, you have, but like not that long. Like,
yeah.
But good really quick.
I fucking hate him.
So Harold, you got out to California. You'd been doing arborist work. Then you worked at Surfer as an intern, so unpaid. Then you worked for the Inertia for like a year, year and a half unpaid. When you got there and you started getting paid, did you feel comfortable at that point? Like you weren't a fraud because you kind of had all that experience even when you were just doing it for free?
No way. No. I still feel like a fraud.
Why?
I don't know. You ever heard of that imposter syndrome thing?
Yeah, totally.
I feel like, I don't know. I might have a bit of that. I don't know. Like I know I'm good at what I do. But I still feel like sometimes that like I just have lucked into it too much, and I'm like, how the fuck did this happen? Like, it's awesome. I wouldn't change it for the world, but it just, everything lined up so perfectly. Like I was in school, I did a bunch of like oil patch work and stuff, and then I went to school because I hated it, and then Surfer, I wrote to Surfer magazine just on a whim and be like, hey, you guys need an intern, and they basically just said, give me some writing samples, and I gave them some, and then they called me and said, yeah, can you show up? And I was like, holy fuck, okay. So I packed my truck, I built a bed in the back, and then lived in a rest stop for like 4 months, and worked at Surfer. And then I tried super hard to get a job there, because there was a job opening when I was leaving, and they gave it to somebody else who, as far as I could see, was like, didn't deserve it, but it was like an insider He was like already in the surf industry. So I get it. But as I moved home, and then I started being an arborist, and then the guy who started the website, he, like I said, he called me and was like, you want to help? And then called me back in a couple, you know, year and a half. We went down there, he paid me a little bit. And then ever since then, it's just been like, you know, slight little raises until now it's like an actual, you know, career. It's been like almost, I guess, 9 years now doing it. And I'm super comfortable with it. I work from home. There used to be a lot of traveling before like coronavirus stuff. But I still, sometimes I'm like, you know, if I talk to somebody else who's in the industry, like maybe with a different publication, I feel like they know what they're doing more than I do, even though that's probably not the case, or maybe it's not the case.
It doesn't make sense that you should think that.
Yeah. Cause I've been doing it for 9 years and I definitely, like, I know what I'm doing and I'm confident with, like, I can do it. But sometimes I feel like that guy has to know more than I do, cause I'm just fucking bumbling my way through everything I do.
That's the same with the other guy too.
I swear to God, man, as I get older, I just feel like everyone on earth is faking it. And there's just like different levels of how good at faking it you are.
You can kind of get away with faking a lot, but like,
yes. Yeah. Just pretend you know what you're doing. And then eventually you sort of figure it out. And if you do it with enough confidence, the other people around you are like, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, totally. Sometimes, yeah, no, I've been in that situation lots where you're like, I don't really think I'm the best at this, but you think I can get at it, and you're the one paying me.
Yeah, dude, and that actually helps too, like having somebody have confidence in you. That's what I've, one thing I've noticed too with having like people under me or like interns or whatever. When I was an intern, it was like, oh, he's an intern, so he like, can't do it. And it like made me feel like I couldn't. And then I had this one guy named Joel Patterson, who was like, I think he might be at Surfers Journal now. Anyway, Joel is fucking rad. Guy's so nice. And he was like, he would just pass me an assignment and fucking back off and be like, yeah, like you can do this. You're fine. Like, I know you can't. And I was like, yeah, I can. Like, I can do this. Like, this shit isn't that hard. It's just talk to somebody, write it down, and then like form a story out of it. Like, I can do it. So that's one thing that like with our interns, like, for the most part, I'm never like I'll teach them something if they ask, but for the most part, just like they can probably do it. They're not idiots. Most people aren't. So it's just like, I don't know. I feel like that's one thing that I learned from being an intern, being treated like shit, is like treat somebody nicely and they'll like probably perform better. And then they don't feel like shit, which is a huge bonus.
Do other people still treat interns like shit?
Oh, fuck yeah. Totally.
That's part of the process.
I mean, it shouldn't be. I hopefully it's going away a little bit. I don't know. We had, I know of this one story. I'm not going to say any names here or anything, but there was pretty public. It was like there's a bunch of people on the Zoom meeting, and there's an intern there. And one of the guys who was on the meeting, the intern didn't have her microphone muted, and you could like hear some background noise or whatever. And like this intern had been there for like 2 months working with this guy. And he went, hey, intern, turn your fucking mic off. And I was like, dude, you know that intern's name. Like, you know it. And there was a bunch of people on the Zoom meeting and you could tell the intern was super embarrassed. And I was like, oh man, that is just terrible. You're a piece of shit.
I don't think you're allowed to talk to people like that at work anymore.
No, this was just a couple years ago. But
yeah, that's that. I'm pretty sure that companies have policies against that kind of thing.
Yeah, fucking terrible. I don't know. I just hate that shit. It's stupid.
Do you remember the articles or like the writing that you sent Surfer when you hadn't had like any experience with anybody?
Yeah. Oh man, I was embarrassed. So I had, what did I have? I had been working for a college newspaper. And I had like two articles about the skimboarding competition that I just did not fucking care about in the slightest, but I just got like sent there for the college paper. So I sent them those two things. And then I think I had had a story that I wrote about a trip I did to Nicaragua that I just pitched to SBC Surf. And they published that.
Oh, that's sick that you got that published before you even interned.
Yeah, I was doing some freelance stuff.
Oh, that's wicked.
Yeah, so I would basically just take a trip and then like would write a story and then try and pitch somebody. So I think I had that and then a couple others from like, fuck, I can't remember. That's so long ago now. But I did have like a handful of things that I could send them. And one was that it was a travel story. So it was like, you know, but I guaranteed there was people. I don't know why they picked me. I think it was probably because it was just some weird Canadian kid that was like, hey, like not a, just another kid from Southern California. So I feel like that was probably part of it. It was just like I was a sort of a different person than they usually have in Southern California.
Yeah. Do you think that your writing is like completely better than back then? Or do you think you had some good stuff going on then that you like don't use as much anymore?
Oh, that's tough. Yeah, sometimes I read shit that I wrote a long time ago and I hate it and I'm like cringing. But other times I read stuff that I wrote and I'm like, man, you can tell that I actually was like really, really passionate about that piece. And I think that's still the case now. Sometimes I write stuff that I like, it's just a news hit and I don't, not necessarily interested in it. Whereas if I'll do a feature story, I'm like, I don't know, somebody that I find real, like a while ago, I did a feature story on this family that they sail around in this boat called the SV Delos, Brian and his wife, Karen. And they were like an unreal family that wasn't necessarily about surfing. It was just like, they had a super cool story. They spend their entire life sailing and they have a little baby. And they've been doing it for like 12 years. They just blow up the world.
I saw that you wrote that story, but I didn't read that one.
Yeah. So like, it didn't do that well traffic wise, but, that was just like something I was really interested in talking to those people. And those are the kind of things that I feel like, when a writer is like interested in their subject, it really comes through, I think. Anyway, so sometimes, like for instance, that Nicaragua story from 10 years ago, I bet you, I haven't read it in a couple of years, but I bet you if I read it again, I'd be like, I like this. This is good. Whereas if I, some shit that I did for a surfer that was like, whatever, I had to do a wax survey once where I had to talk to a bunch of surfers about what kind of wax they use. And I was like, oh my God, like nobody gives a shit. So I bet you if I read that, I'd be like, ugh, this is terrible.
Is there a lot of stuff that you like have to write that you're like, this is just work?
I mean, sometimes. Not a ton. That's mostly just emails. But for the most part, I've gotten to a point now where if I don't care about something enough to write a good piece about it, like I can sort of pass it off to somebody else. And then if they don't care about it, they can say, no, I don't want to write it, which is sort of like, I think a good thing because it, like I said before, it really shows when a writer is like interested in what they're writing about. So if none of our team cares about a certain subject, we'll just be like, okay, fuck it. We're not going to do a story on it because it's going to come out shitty anyway.
Yeah, that's wicked. Because for my podcast, I only talk to people that I want to talk to.
That's a good podcast, though. I like it.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, same idea as you, just like trying to just start it. And then I'm interning right now. do you think you could have made it as a freelancer?
I mean, I was freelancing. It was fine. I just, I got sick of not having a steady paycheck. So it was like working pretty well. I mean, it was obviously, I think most freelancers, honestly, it's probably like more of a supplemental thing. You'd be hard pressed to find, like, I know two people that I can think of off the top of my head that actually like exclusively freelance. Cause it's fucking impossible to have a steady paycheck. It's really hard to actually make like a decent amount of money. And it's like really time consuming because you got to interview people, and it depends on the magazine too or whatever, but like unless you're writing for like O Magazine or like Reader's Digest, they pay like, you know, $1.50, $2 a word.
Those magazines do?
Yeah, they pay a ton, but like
that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. And I bet you that's changed too in the last couple of years with like, you know, the rise of online stuff. But when I was doing it, it was like those were the two that I was like, I got to write for Oprah. I need to write for the for Reader's Digest, which sounds weird, but like they pay a fortune.
That's a lot.
Yeah, but like surf magazines, you know, they pay probably between, I don't know what it is now, but like I bet you 30 to 80 cents a word. So not very much.
No, not if it's a short little article.
No. So it's like really hard to make money as a freelancer. And then it's also like a weird thing because, you know, writing for even freelance for like online stuff just inherently pays less. So it's just a hard thing to, do. You can do it, especially if you like work up a sort of a clientele. But it's honestly for most people, it's probably supplemental. So my freelance stuff was like on the side of doing the utility arborist work. Just cause it was shit that I like doing. And I like really enjoyed seeing, this is a vanity thing, but seeing like my name in print over top of something I wrote, I was like, I loved it. I still kind of get a thrill out of it if I get something like printed, like in print. But I used to just love that. So yeah, I mean, I was freelancing quite a bit and I was probably not making enough money to like do anything. Like I was probably making enough money to pay rent. But yeah, I don't know. As soon as I got an opportunity to have a salary, I was like, I'll take that all day.
Did you like when you were freelancing, did you write to a magazine and say, did you have to pitch the story or did you have the story and then say, this is done, will you print it?
It kind of depended. Sometimes I would do both. Sometimes I'd pitch a story. And then other times if I was just really interested in writing it, I'd just write it and be like, hey, do you want this? And it was like, you know, for the most part, it worked pretty well. Like I did a series for SBC Surf when they're still around, called the Northern Collective, where I just interviewed, like, this was years ago now, 10 years ago. I just interviewed Pete DeVries, Noah Cohen, I think Seth Brewiler, a bunch of like Canadian surfers. And then I wrote these interviews and I just called this guy, Malcolm Johnson, who helped me out a ton. Like I was awesome at SBC Surf.
Right.
He was like, yeah, cool. We'll take these. And I was like, sweet. Okay, good. But I mean, now being on the other side, like as an editor, it's kind of a hard thing to say like which one's better, because unless you know the writer and you know it's going to be good, just a cold call pitch is really hard to like accept, because I mean, you don't want somebody wasting their time on something you might say no about, you might say no to. But for me, if I don't know the person or their writing, send me something that's done, like as close to done as you think. But if I know you've worked together before, then yeah, just pitch me an idea. And it's funny, cause like being on the other side, on the editorial side now, I never really understood that before. So I would just cold pitch to people. I had no fucking idea who I was. And I'd never get responses back. And like, I'd always be like, fuck that guy. Like, why aren't you writing me back, you jerk? And now I'm like, oh, I get it. Like,
do you not write people back that cold call you now?
I still really try and write people back. I'm sure some slip through the cracks because there's a lot. But I like, that was one thing that really stuck in my head was like, at least give the person, actually that reminds me, there's somebody I have to write. She wrote me like 2 weeks ago. Shit. But that stuck in my head is like, you know, give this person like their respect that just to write them back, even a quick thing. Like having a no is way better than a nothing.
Yeah, I totally agree. I write people all the time to try to convince them to come on my podcast, and I get like silence all the time. And I'm like, just a no would be really nice. Yeah. And once in a while, people do say no, and I'm like, well, I appreciate the no. Thanks. You saying that.
Yeah, thank you for telling me.
Yeah, yeah, because it just makes you feel like you're just not even worth responding, you know?
Totally. Yeah, it sucks.
So you were firefighting, and then did you get to a point when you were like, I'm done firefighting, I want to write, what I really want to do is write, and then you took a course at Camosun, like an 8-month course?
No, it was kind of a fluke, actually. So I was firefighting, and I was doing like shit up north in the winter as well, like pipelining and like, you know, like cutting seismic lines and like fall and burn and stuff. And then I decided I was really sick of seasonal work and I hated being up north. So I was like, I'm gonna go back to school. And I had already been to college once, but I took like biology, geoscience, geology, and English. And I just flunked out of it. This is like an ongoing thing in my life. If I don't care about something, I don't put any fucking effort into it.
So you went and just wasted your time and money?
Oh yeah. Yeah, just because I felt like that was what you do after high school. So I flunked out, which is I think a really common story. But I flunked out of everything except for English, because like English I cared about. The other shit I was like, ugh. Went up north, decided after 7 years of doing that, I was like, this is horrible. So I went back to school a 2-year diploma in communications.
Oh, that's what it was, a 2-year diploma program.
Yeah, it was actually really interesting. That program doesn't exist anymore, but it should. It's called Applied Communications. And it was like, there's a journalism section. There's a video section, like how to produce videos, like for TV and movies and stuff. There's a photography section, and there's just like a general kind of print thing. And it was awesome. Like it was so fucking, so helpful. And it was like real life shit. Part of the curriculum was like actually going and producing segments, like news segments for like Czech TV. And part of it was like making a magazine from scratch, like sourcing writers, like figuring out all the print process. It was unreal. Like it's shocking to me that program doesn't exist anymore, because it was like the most helpful thing ever.
Yeah, it really worked for you. Look at you now, you're an editor.
Yeah, which I still don't get. Anyway, yeah, so that was like super helpful. And then from there it just kind of like happened. It just was like a really slow burn, but like, yeah, I didn't ever expect this. Honestly, I didn't expect the website to ever be like a career. But now it's been 10 years. I'm like, I guess it's a career.
Yeah, it is for sure. 10 years is like a long time to do any job.
I think our 10-year anniversary was just like a few days ago.
Oh, crazy.
Is it November? No, it was like a month and a half ago.
Do you think you ever would have got your start if you didn't take that program?
Probably not. No.
Like what would have been missing if you just started writing and cold calling people and sending them articles?
Like what did the course teach me?
Yeah. Like why couldn't you have just wrote without that course?
Kept freelancing and stuff. Yeah. I guess, yeah, I could have, but I think, in terms of, cause the internship was like a huge, like it basically, cause so the guy who started the website I work for, he was the one that hired me at Surfer. So he was working as Surfer's online editor. And then he hired me for that. And then when he left Surfer, he called me. So like, but I wouldn't have been able to get an internship without being at school.
Oh, okay. So you would have never got the ball rolling.
No, because I guess like for interns, you have to be able to prove you're at school, and you need to get like your college credit and stuff. So yeah, I don't think I ever would have actually interned at all if it wasn't for going to school. Plus it was just really fucking fun. School is a blast. Like if I could just be in school all the time, if I could do like 6 months of learning and then 6 months of like applying that and then 6 months of learning something else and then 6 months of applying that, like for sure I'd do that all day for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that sounds like a good setup. Then you don't have to wonder like, what am I going to do? How am I going to buy a house? Like, yeah. What's the one thing in the world that I want to spend the rest of my life doing?
Totally. And I just enjoy like, school is fucking fun. Like learning shit that you're interested in is like fun. I don't know.
Yeah, it is really fun. And you get to make friends if you're in a cool program that attracts lots of cool people.
Yeah, they're all similar minded, hopefully. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like it's weird that we don't focus more on like, as a society, like education is like just a ongoing thing, like throughout your life.
Yeah.
Like, it's enjoyable to learn stuff.
It is really enjoyable and it's good for you in tons of ways. And yep. It's almost like if you get to like mid 30s and you didn't already get on it, it's like, you're probably not going to get an education, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. It's stupid that we do like school, job until you're fucking dead.
Yeah. And it's like, you had to figure out what the school was early and no one knows what they want to do.
Fuck no. When I went back to school the second time, I was like, I think it was like 27, something like that. So I was like a little bit older than most of the people in the class. But I like could see the kids that were like me when I first went to school that were just like in it because they were like, this is what you do after high school. And then I was paying for school myself too. So it was like way more important to me, because I was like, I'm not going to waste my fucking money.
Yeah.
And I was like really interested in this stuff. And I was like, God damn it. Somebody should have fucking told me this out of high school. Like the European gap year, like go, that should be in place for everyone. Like go do some shit, go traveling, go do some fucking garbage work. Like go figure out what you hate and then go study what you like. Like, God damn. It's just, I feel like so many people's lives are just wrecked by the time they're 30 because they've fucking wasted so much time.
I know.
It's cool to be something I don't want to be.
I know, totally. Or like, yeah, or even just like, you waste so much time just figuring out what you want to do as you go through jobs too. You're like, okay, I don't like that one. Don't like that one.
Yeah. I'm on my fucking, like, this is like my fifth career now.
I'm pretty similar too.
I don't know. It's good. Change is good though, I think. Otherwise you're just stuck in a rut.
Yeah, totally. Do you have any stories from like living in your van and even just traveling in your van?
Oh man, there's a couple, but I don't know if I want them to be publicized. They're pretty horrible. There's just like the regular, like a lot of like desperate shitting stories when you're like in a, like the van's in Mexico now. We just leave it down there because we drove it down there. And then I found a dog. We found a box full of dogs. And then we couldn't drive the dogs back through the States. So we had to fly them back to Canada. So we left the van in storage there. And it's been there ever since. We just pay a monthly storage and then like fly to it and then drive it around. It's sweet. But
that's awesome.
Yeah. So there's like a bunch of surfboards in it, a bunch of spearfishing gear. And you just like fly there with like nothing. I leave clothes there. So you just fly there with like nothing. And then everything is there waiting.
That's baller.
It's awesome, dude. The van doesn't have a toilet. So it's like, there's been a lot of times where it's like, oh shit. Like, I don't know. I shit my wetsuit once, like a full fucking down the leg shit, like full on at a full sprint. It was just terrible.
That's the worst. I can't believe I've never done that actually, but that sounds like, a surfer's nightmare.
Try not to. It's horrible. And it's like, living in California, honestly, most of the dirtbag stories are about shitting. Like living in California was like, we were on the street in Venice. So like you wake up in the middle of the night and like, it's obviously rare, but if you're sick or whatever, you got to shit in the middle of the night. Like what the fuck do? You can't go to the YMCA because they're locked.
Yeah.
We could drive to my office because I had a key card. But it was like a few times it was like pretty close where you're like, I got to shit in a bag here or something.
Yeah, because at least if you're in the woods, you can just, like, dig a hole.
Yeah, but if you're in the middle of Venice, like, you might have to shit in a bucket and then fucking leave that bucket in your van until you can wash your bucket out.
Oh, bucket poops.
Oh, it's bad, dude. It's bad.
When you shit your wetsuit, was that the end of that suit?
Actually, surprisingly, no. it probably should have been, but I threw a towel around my waist, ran down to the ocean, like, washed it out real well. But I only had two wetsuits for that trip. So I was like, and one was a 4 mil. And I was like, I'm not going to wear a 4 mil for the rest of the trip. I was like, I'm keeping my 2 mil. I don't care. Nobody else wants to wear it now. It was bad. That was a bad time in my life.
Dark days.
Yeah. You got to have them though. Otherwise the other days aren't very bright.
Do you ever like write and drink?
Yeah, lots. I mean,
is it hard or is it better?
No.
How does it change it?
It's worse. I find it's like if I'm drunk when I'm writing something. So a lot of times I'll have like ideas to write about when I'm drunk. If I'm drinking, I'll be like, oh, that'd be fucking great. Or like, that's like a paragraph, especially if I'm going to sleep when I'm like drunk, I'll like think of a sentence or a paragraph that I think sounds really nice at the time. And then I'll write it down and it's like usually fucking over the top, like just so fucking flowery and stupid. And I'm like, ugh. But a lot of time those ideas are like solid. So a lot of time, if I do ever like feel like writing when I'm drunk, I definitely do it. Just with the knowledge that I'm going to read it tomorrow and fucking hate it, but maybe get like a piece of something that I can do better later on. So it's like it's good for like inspiration, but not so good for like the actual like act of writing.
That's funny. So it gets you like loose enough that you get creative new ideas, but like they seem way better at the time than they actually are, but there's still some gold in there.
Yeah, it's like a good peach pit, but like just the peach around it while you're drunk is rotten. So like the next day you're like, ugh, that fucking peach is disgusting. Like, get rid of that shit. And then you're like, oh, but that pit's like, I could plant that somewhere.
Oh, that's a really good analogy.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's definitely one of those things where you like, at least for me anyway, I think of like the like brooding drunk writer. And I don't necessarily think that's like a great, it's like romantic and nice to like, it's like a good picture of like what, you know, there's like the sad, depressed like guy who's sucking on a glass of bourbon or whatever and like smoking cigarettes and like really struggling. Like, I don't want to be sad and struggling. Like, I don't know. I like that idea for some reason. I like that picture of like that certain kind of writer, but like, I don't want to feel shitty.
Yeah. And, you just want to write good.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. I want to write well, but I don't want to, and I think it's bullshit. The idea that you have to suffer to like write really, you have to like, I think it's bullshit. Cause like everybody has shit that they go through. Everyone suffers through stuff. Obviously some things are worse than others, but like the idea that you need to like suffer for your work is just fucking garbage. I don't want to feel unhappy ever. I would much rather like work on feeling happy and staying happy all the time, which is impossible. But like for the most part, I don't want to like dwell on shit. I don't want to like brood about stuff. I don't want to be like the sad drunk guy that's like, I can only write my story if I'm drunk and sad.
Yeah, that sounds really unhealthy.
Yeah, dude. And I feel like a lot of writers like strive for that, which is fucking weird to me. Like, I got a couple of friends who are like good writers, but they definitely have that in them where they're like, they want to feel like they're like Hemingway in a rowboat blowing his head off with a shotgun. Like, fuck that. I mean, like your writing might be fantastic, but like that's not going to mean shit to most people. And then you're going to be fucking miserable for your whole life.
Yeah, I think like, you know, when Lil Wayne was drinking like Scissor or whatever, I think a lot of rappers did that too and then just became addicted to it and they didn't write like Lil Wayne, you know?
Fuck, I don't know. Yeah, as much cough syrup as a guy's drinking, like he's definitely a fucking genius underneath the cough syrup and he probably done without the cough syrup. And
yeah, he'd probably be better without the cough syrup.
Yeah, and then there's all these guys that aren't geniuses and don't have the talent he has. And then they're just hooked on fucking codeine.
Yeah, exactly.
Codeine and 7-Up.
Do you ever like come, you like sit down and you're like, okay, I want to write the next chapter. And then you can't? Like, what do you do when you're just blocked?
A couple things. So I have like a definite, like I have a schedule that I stick to. I have like a door that I close. I have a spot that I write. It's just like all habit for me. And I have a really hard time doing it anywhere else, which kind of sucks because it means like,
yeah,
I don't know, it means I can't necessarily like go somewhere and do it. I mean, it's not going to be as good, I don't think. And again, this is all couched in the fact that some of my writing just fucking sucks no matter what. But if I do get stuck, which happens all the time, I think to everybody who tries to write for a living, I'll generally try and write a really short story that's like less than 500 words about something entirely off topic, like something that's not even close to what I'm writing about. So like 500 word short story about like a fish in a lake that like something happened to that fish. Like I'll just figure out a short story with like a beginning, middle and end and then barf it out and like throw it away. But it like sort of kickstarts shit a little bit.
Oh, crazy. That's a really good trick.
Yeah. I mean, it works for me anyway. I don't know. And then you get like sometimes you get like good little stories out of it.
Yeah, sometimes they're not throwaways.
Those yeah, stories. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I have any that haven't been throwaways. But
Alex, do you have any memories of firefighting that like that really stand out? Like any cool stories from firefighting that you look back on fondly on those times?
That whole time was so fun. Like when I have children, I'm making sure they do that. Cause that was like, honestly, that was the best 6 years of my whole life. Like the friends, I don't really talk to too many of them anymore, but like, fuck, I know that if I ran into somebody in the street that I worked with, like, fuck, we're best friends. That whole time was so fun. There's like a bunch of little stories, but like, fuck, honestly, the entire fucking time was awesome. Like even the suffering shit was made better because you're, you know, you're doing it with people who are also fucking hating what they're doing. Cause it's not great. You know, it's not like all awesome. It's not like all just back burning and falling big trees. It's like fucking spraying a puddle for 18 hours.
Sometimes you're just like carrying 150 pounds full of hose through like muskeg.
Yeah. Up a fucking hill for the whole day. It's horrible. Yeah. I hate it. But everybody else also hates it. So it's kind of, I don't know, you just get super close. I guess that's the thing that I took away from firefighting is like that whole thing of camaraderie is like super real. Like it's that's, I mean, I guess that's why I was never much into like sports in high school, like team sports. But that whole idea of like camaraderie, I had like never actually experienced that to like a real degree until firefighting. And that shit's awesome. There could be people I wouldn't get along with at all in real life, but like, because we worked on fires together, like I fucking love that person. It's super nice. The whole experience was great to me. I loved it.
That was the best part about it, was the friends for sure.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's fucking great, man. Everybody should do that job for at least 2 years. As long as you're on a good crew. I feel like we lucked out with Rhinos because it was like an awesome crew. Especially the time we were doing it too. Like, I don't know.
We got it at the right time.
Big time. I heard it's gone downhill.
But yeah, Harrow, I think I might let you go.
No, it's actually great timing because I got to pick up my niece in 7 minutes.
Yeah, good to talk to you. Good to see you too, Harrow. And thanks a lot for taking the time to talk to me, Alex.
Yeah, you bet. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, you bet.
Keep in touch. You should hang out.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. Have a good rest of your day.
You too.
Yeah. See you. Yeah. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Their Life Story podcast. That was my guest, Alex Harrow. Up next week, I have Mike and Damien from Change Toothpaste. I'd like to give a special shout out to everybody that listens, to my beautiful girlfriend, Nikki Chamberlain, and my best listener and biggest fan, Teo Dow. Thank you.